Right, let's do this crazy thing. From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 98 of Little Brother for the 20th of August, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. This is amusing, and quite frankly, I am stunned that this didn't surface earlier. It seems as though Janet Jackson's 1989 hit Rhythm Nation can crash an older laptop computer. No, there's nothing wrong with the encoding. It doesn't even matter if it's being played from an MP3, a compact disc, or even if you want to go old school and play it from a cassette, it will crash computers of a certain vintage. The problem, it seems, stems from the hard drives used in these machines. Certain common models of 5400 RPM 2.5-inch drives have a resonant frequency which lines right up with some of the sounds heard in the song, disabling the hard drive for brief periods of time, a situation that the computer and its software are just not designed to manage, and down it goes. Thankfully, with the increased use of solid-state storage devices, this will only become less of a problem. Routers using the Realtek RTL8190 series chips, which are used by over 60 different router vendors, have a critical vulnerability. The vulnerability, rated 9.8 out of 10 in terms of its criticality and severity, permits an attacker to cause a stack overflow that opens the system up to remote code execution. The attack can be carried out from the WAN connection, that is, from the internet at large. It doesn't require the user to do anything, and the user will likely be completely unaware that they've been pwned. These routers are all over the place. Thankfully, there is a fix that has been available since March, so you know what to do. Patch your systems. Web browsers built into mobile apps, such as those made available from TikTok, Meta, or other social media companies, may be tracking you quite a bit more than you realize. In some cases, the in-app browsers may be tracking you to such a fine level of detail as to get your every keystroke, whether you submitted them or not. Not healthy. Thankfully, there is a tool that lets you analyze this. Send yourself a link to inappbrowser.com, that's inappbrowser.com, on the social media platform of your choice, and then click the link and see what happens. Better yet, lose all the apps and access the platforms with a common web browser. They'll fight you on it, of course, but you'll be better off for it. Security researcher Matt Edmondson has developed a tool to determine if you are being followed. The device, based on a Raspberry Pi and costing about $200 in parts to build, monitors the airwaves for signals from cell phones. It will alert you if it detects the same phone multiple times in a short stretch of time. It appears as though the device uses Wi-Fi to make its determination, so disabling Wi-Fi on a phone could prevent it from being detected. However, this should work in most cases. Edmondson presented his findings at the Black Hat Security Conference last week. I have spoken a lot lately about federal law enforcement hiring data brokers to do their dirty work and to do an end run around the Fourth Amendment by using third-party doctrine. A group of Democratic House leaders are demanding answers about this activity. Representatives Nadler of New York and Thompson of Mississippi have written a letter to the Departments of Justice, Homeland Security, CBP, ICE, and BATF, seeking to learn the scope of the problem. In the meantime, Nadler is sponsoring a bill through the House called the Fourth Amendment Is Not For Sale Act, which, if passed, would require that law enforcement get a warrant before they can purchase data from data brokers. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. This week's pwn is Twilio. Twilio is a provider of programmable communications tools for making and receiving phone calls and text messages. Twilio was the victim of a phishing attack. Here's the bad news. Twilio is used by OpenWhisper Systems, the company behind the Signal private messenger that I and many others I know love so much for its security. Some Signal accounts were compromised in this pwn. However, here's the good news. Twilio was right on top of it. Only approximately 1,900 Signal accounts were compromised, and OpenWhisper Systems is reaching out to those users directly to fix the damage. It is unusual for the pwn of the week to end in congratulations, but I do feel that some are in order for Twilio for getting on top of it and reining it in quick order. If you use Signal and you haven't heard from them, you're probably safe. If you don't use Signal, well, I still think you should. Holy shit, guys, this is stupid. This is two fails and a pwn all wrapped up into one package. South Staffordshire Water is the company that owns and operates the waterworks for 1.6 million people living in and around South Staffordshire and Cambridge, England. They got pwned by the Clop ransomware gang. That's the pwn. Clop have indicated that they can get into the SCADA systems for South Staffordshire Water. So naturally, they sent a ransom note to Thames Water, which supplies water to London, 60 miles to the south. That's one of the two fails. But the second fail, and by far the largest one, is back on South Staffordshire Water. All right, I used the term SCADA a moment ago. It's an acronym. It stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. These are systems that are used to control process equipment. These are systems that can change the parameters of a manufacturing process, issuing commands to the machinery carrying it out, and reporting back what the machinery is doing. Guys, I don't know how to sugarcoat this. What the ever-loving fuck are your SCADA systems doing online? You provide a literal life and death critical service to your customers. On top of that, you are in the middle of a fucking drought. Air gap that motherfucker. Seriously, get it offline. This is not a fucking game, and you put the well-being of 1.6 million people at risk. Around maybe 12 years ago, I noticed an intriguing business model. It may have already existed prior to that point, probably did, but I thought it was interesting. The basic idea was that you create a product that uses a service of some sort, but instead of requiring people to sign up for the service, you just simply bundle the service into the price of the product. In particular, I have two devices that fit this strategy. The first is a VoIP service. There was a lot of grumbling online at the idea that the ATA for this service was priced at $200, which, yeah, that's a bit spendy. By the way, it's much cheaper now. But here's the thing. You bring it home, you plug it in, you register it, and it's on. The first year of service is free, or more accurately, rolled into the price of the device. And after that, you only pay the taxes on the phone service. The provider figured out that the devices would have an average lifespan of 5 years. All right, I'm into year 12 with mine, but I think it's safe to say that I'm getting my money's worth, but there's also somebody out there who only maybe used theirs for a year or even a few months, so it balances out. It's kind of a cool business model, really. Another device I have, which I actually got as a birthday gift, also about a dozen years ago, is a little weather station. You just tell it what city on its list is closest to you, and it displays a 4-day forecast and the current temperature. You don't need to do anything like hook it up to your Wi-Fi or whatever, because it receives a broadcast signal using a repurposed pager network. They were able to safely roll the cost of service into the price of the device because the incremental cost of adding a device to a broadcast network is literally zero. Well, 2 days ago, the network service for this device was terminated. It has reached the end of its service life, and I have a sad. For 12 years, this device has been faithfully keeping me up to date on the weather, and now it's over. I'm not here to commiserate over that, though. I knew there would be an end to it at some point in time. Even if adding devices to the network costs nothing, running the network actually does. I'd like to offer it, though, as a cautionary tale. My little weather bug was probably not a particularly expensive item. I'm not looking because, as I said, it was a gift, but I would guess it was well under a C-note. Losing the use of this device is sad, but hardly critical and hardly costly. But what if you have something expensive that uses a network connection like that? Something like, for instance, a car. Well, numerous car makers have for years now been making their vehicles connected. First, there was OnStar, but that has expanded out to the point where cars now connect for software updates, remote unlocking, self-driving, numerous other features, and quite often you don't pay for those services as a subscription, you pay for them up front. Famously, there was an instance when Tesla sent out a software update to cars that were in a hurricane-struck area to allow them to drive farther on a charge, which raises some other questions that I'm going to save for another time, but for right now, it's enough to just know that there is a networking dependency there which you're not specifically paying for, which Tesla or GM or Ford or whoever is paying for. Eventually, those network services are going to reach the end of their service life. Then what? If you go to a car show today, you're likely to see some classics that date back, as recently as the 90s or as far back as the 1920s, and they still run. The only bit of connectivity that many of them had is a radio, which of course still works because AM and FM broadcasting are still a thing. If you were to go to a car show in 2050, though, will you see a 2020 Tesla on display in working order? Or will it be completely unusable because the 4 and 5G cellular networks that it depends on no longer exist? I wonder. I noticed something disturbing yesterday. I was looking around on Amazon for something for my car. Yes, I was using Amazon, don't judge. So I was looking for something for my car, and what appears at the top of the page but a box that says, filter results by vehicle. And there, it has a picture of a car that is the same make, model, and year as my wife's car, and a button that says change vehicle. All right, I'll bite. Maybe she entered the specs for her car somewhere along the line for some reason. I pushed the change vehicle button, fully expecting to find that it would need me to enter data about my vehicle, or at least ask me to, which I would decline, and, oh shit, it has the make, model, and year of my car as the only other option. Now, I don't have any real questions about how they figured this out. Amazon's delivery vans have been going up and down our street for years now, and it's not like they don't know where we live. It would be foolish to believe that they're not decked out in cameras and sensors of every conceivable type. Our two vehicles are on plain view in the driveway most of the time, and we already discussed in episode 80 how AI can be used to identify the make, model, and year of a car. So, really, all the pieces have been there right along, and Amazon has just simply snapped them all together. But, still a bit creepy, don't you think? I have another listener letter this week, and it sets up this week's OPSEC discussion nicely. This comes to us from Daryl, who was inspired to write to us by one of the commentaries from last week. Quick recap, a mother and daughter in Nebraska were arrested and charged with attempting to secure an abortion after 20 weeks, contrary to Nebraska state law. Part of the evidence against them was the text messages that they'd sent between them via ordinary insecure SMS and messages that they had sent each other on Facebook Messenger. Anyway, Daryl writes, there's an old Klingon proverb that says, if you don't want something heard, don't say it. It's from a book called The Final Reflection by John M. Ford. Well, thanks for that, Daryl. The ability of fiction to be a window on the real world is actually pretty amazing sometimes. It can be a great teaching tool. There are, of course, some obviously educational works that are still entertaining, such as Cells at Work, or Staplogefahrer Klaus, that's Forklift Driver Klaus in English, which, by the way, if you haven't seen that video, go look it up on YouTube. It is freaking hysterical, violent, and very educational. But even works intended purely for their entertainment value can teach us things. For instance, there's a popular excerpt from Terry Pratchett's works that teaches an economics lesson and the high cost of being poor based on boots. Fiction can teach us a number of useful things, and if we can learn a bit of OPSEC from Star Trek, hey, that rhymes, I'm good with that. Unfortunately, there's more to it than that. The hell that I am sure that we are headed into at some point is that some poor, unsuspecting woman is going to be using one or another type of biometric tracker. You know the kind, things that monitor body temperature, movement, pulse, oxygen saturation, etc., like a smartwatch, for example, and it's going to provide a tip-off to the tech companies about the women's fertility, pregnancy, or whatnot, which they may or may not make available to the government. Go back and see the headlines. The Mozilla Foundation has a really nice page for figuring out this sort of thing under the branding of Privacy Not Included, which sorts out the creepy products from the not creepy ones. On their reproductive health page, they list 25 products, of which only 9 got a not creepy rating. So sure, we can avoid saying things, and we should, or at least choose carefully where and how we say them, but that doesn't mean we're not observed. That doesn't mean they're not in our grill and in our business. And as I've discussed before, there really is very little difference, if any, between corporate and government surveillance. As usual, we'll end this week's show with the fail of the week. This week's fail goes to the New York State Board of Regents. For those of you not familiar, here in New York State, the Board of Regents are the people who are responsible for creating and administering the statewide exams that high school students may be required to take to graduate, depending on what kind of diploma they're receiving and what their school's policies are. The fail comes from a blog article written by a New York State teacher named Ed Knight. Mr. Knight had a student in his algebra class who, due to a number of personal circumstances, missed a lot of class time. At the end of the school year, this student was panicking, understandably, about how on earth he was going to pass the exam. Mr. Knight's response? Just choose C for everything. He said, quote, "Try it. I'll bet it'll work," end quote. So, the student tried it. And it worked. Mr. Knight reassures us in his blog that he didn't have any special knowledge, there's nothing really special even about choosing C, and that he too would have been skeptical if someone had told him that this would work. No, all he had to do, and go figure, he's a math teacher, all he had to do was do the math. It turns out that between curving the score, making the questions actually remarkably easy, passing the test is not a problem. Answer the questions you can, answer C for everything else, and you pass. A mere 30% of correct answers will pass this test. And this is how education is failing us. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and The Crowded Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Chris, Azriel, Joe Cadillac, Knight Rider 007, Daryl, and Ed for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. However, here's the good news. We're getting right on top of it and refining it. Raining. Ugh. You just tell it what city on its list is. Quick recap, a mother and daughter in Nebraska were arrested and charged with attempting to secure an abortion after 20 weeks, contrary to Nebraska state law. He says, "The Swedish Chef." You're listening to Data Brother. My name is the Swedish Chef. Yep. Mm-hmm. I should put that in English, shouldn't I? Or stop look at our Klaus. That's forklift. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say the thing in there. Mm-hmm.